everybody, welcome again to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. That podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week, I am joined by one of the lovely members of the team, the EV Cafe team, and I have the lovely JC by my side today. Well, not by my side. Hello, JC.
Hello, darling. It's just fabulous. I love this. This is the highlight of every week because we get to meet so really interesting, brilliant people and learn about their lives. Love this.
And this is going to be no exception. We've got, as always, an innovator, pioneer, collaborator in our industry. Somebody that has a long history of being in the decarbonisation sector and making a difference. And it is welcome to Caroline Watson from, C40 Cities. Anyway, she's Director of Transport.
Beautifully done, my friend.
I know. It's seamless. It is C40 Cities. It's nothing else. I was thinking I need to finish this, but it is only C40. I say only C40. Quick, help. Tell us, what do you do and what is C40 Cities? Give people everything and then we can dig into your history.
I will. Great. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here today. So C40 Cities, we are a global network of mayors. So the leading cities around the world taking action on climate change. So when we started, I won't give you the whole history, but we've been going for about 20 years. It's actually 20-year anniversary this year. And we were set up in 2005 by Ken Livingstone when he was the mayor of London. And the idea was that he wanted to lead on climate action in London, but he was struggling to find the resources and the information he needed to be able to do that. So he thought he could learn from other mayors around the world. And he brought together initially 20 cities. So 20 cities that were based in G20 countries. And from there, C20 was born, which then later on became C40. Now we then had a network of 40 cities, and now we have almost 100. So cities around the world collaborating to take climate action. That's what we do.
How do they do that? How? All of those cities, so much learning, so much information. How on earth do you corral all that knowledge to make it useful and insightful so that people can go and do stuff?
Well, that's a good question. So my day job is I'm the director of transport. So I lead the transport team. So we focus on things like, you know, making streets safer for walking and cycling, but also the rollout of electric vehicles, because we know that all the vehicles that we have on our road need to be zero emission. So I started off working at C40 about nearly 8 years ago now, where I was leading the zero emission vehicle network. It was actually the low emission vehicle network at the time. So you can see how things have changed just in the last 8 years. So like really bringing cities together, whether it's through workshops, through webinars, through one-to-one discussions, you know, like if the mayor of Milan wants to learn about zero emission freight, we can get them on the phone to the mayor of Rotterdam. We did this recently to talk about, what they're doing in the Netherlands on freight decarbonisation. So it's very much literally bringing the cities together. So one of the key things I did when I first joined C40 was we organised a study tour to China because, you know, as we all know, the Chinese are leading on vehicle electrification. So like taking city officials from around the world to actually see the electric buses on the road. You know, Shenzhen in China has got, I think it's like 100% zero emission taxis and buses. And I think it's over like 20,000 electric taxis, over 16,000 electric buses. So just seeing this in the real world to show that the technology was viable, especially 8 years ago, you know, when this wasn't the norm, not to say having 100% fleets is necessarily the norm right now, but we've made a lot of progress since then. So I think at that point in time, it was very much about understanding that technology was real and viable and seeing it in the real world.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
That's just, I'm when we first spoke, Caroline, I think it was a friend of ours, Ian Martin. Was it Ian? Did we speak? I was blown away by this concept of just kind of getting all of the learning from all of the key mayors across the world. I mean, give us a little bit of an insight. Who are the leading cities across the world? And yeah, and you might have to be politically correct here, but who's really leading the way when it comes to decarbonisation?
Well, I mean, the Chinese are leading. I mean, like I said, I've already given the example from some of those Chinese, from Shenzhen as an example. But I think in looking, leaders in every region, but also leaders on different parts of the equation. So, for example, I mean, I already mentioned the Netherlands, but the Netherlands have rolled out, I think it's 18 zero emission zones for freight across the country. So that's had a huge impact in terms of van sales. So I think they went from 11% last year to 78% this year, just as a result of those zero emission zones in cities. So
wow.
It just shows you the power of, you know, city policies and taking interventions at the city level. But then, you know, you look at Oslo. I mean, everybody knows the example of Oslo and Norway, you know, huge vehicle electrification. They're kind of like the obvious examples. But we've been doing a lot of work in Latin America, whereas when we first started working in cities like Mexico, Rio de Janeiro, Santiago de Chile, there weren't that many, if any, electric buses on the road. So we working with the cities to say, okay, what's the one thing you can really influence? And where do you start? And I think bus technology was really a really strong starting place. So I think we've been working about 7 or 8 years, well, probably 7 years now with our, it's called our Zebra project. We're not the only people to have a Zebra project about electric buses, apparently, if you Google it, but it's the Zero Emission Bus Rapid Deployment Accelerator, Zebra. We love to name our projects after animals. It's catchy. But the Zebra project, you know, working with the cities in Latin America, we've gone from very few electric buses to over 7,000 and another 5,000 electric buses in the pipeline. So, you know, just helping the cities understand that the technology is viable, helping them with pilots, helping them with procurement, helping them access the finance, you know, all those stepping stones actually get the vehicles on the road.
I'm fascinated to understand about the UK perspective and the UK's involvement in this. So in terms of the mayors who are pushing forward and are really leading the way, everybody knows that Sadiq Khan has his agenda for decarbonisation. I'm interested to understand who else plays in that space in the UK and who would you like to be more involved from cities that currently don't have a high presence?
Well, we only actually really work with London because the cities we work with tend to be mega cities, so the biggest cities in the world. We have some innovator cities or cities that are kind of strategically important, like Auckland in New Zealand, because they wouldn't meet the threshold, or again, Oslo, they wouldn't meet the kind of threshold in terms of numbers of citizens. But Sadiq Khan is our current chair. We have two chairs. We have Sadiq Khan, and then we also have Mayor Aki Sawyer, who's the mayor of Freetown in Sierra Leone. So we're trying to have like a real global representation on our steering committee and you know, kind of from in our leadership. But I mean, I guess the simple answer to your question is we want everybody to be doing this stuff, right? And, you know, we're working with the biggest cities largely because that's where you have the biggest impact. And if we could show that it's possible in these, you know, I think there's 97 cities around the world now that we're working with across 51 countries. If we could show these things are possible in those cities, then why can't everybody do this?
Absolutely. But I guess what that means is that we need to step down from your global perspective in order to make those cities, which are still huge, Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool, Edinburgh, we need to step that down a bit. Is there an organisation or a partner organisation that you work with to spread that knowledge and to work collaboratively to implement at a lower level?
Yeah. So there's the Global Covenant of Mayors that we work really closely with. And then there's other organisations that, you know, like, for example, a few years ago, we did some work with UK 100 because we were working on a what was called the Green Healthy Streets Accelerator, where we were trying to get cities to commit to procure zero emission buses and introduce zero emission zones. So, yeah, when there are, yeah, very much. So, I mean, there are partnerships specific quite often to specific programs that we're working on where we'll try to collaborate together to bring more cities on board and share the lessons as well, share the knowledge.
Cool. Good.
What's been the most exciting thing that you've seen? Because, I mean, you kind of have like the best job in decarbonisation in the world, in my humble opinion. You get to see all of the really, really cool stuff. What was that sort of email or that project that came into your inbox and you went, wow, this is great. I love this. What was that?
Well, we're currently working on a project with Amazon and the Climate Pledge, where we're working in India and Mexico and Rio, where we are trying to implement truck electrification. So we've been working for 3 years and together so far. And in India, for example, we have been focusing on electric corridor between Bangalore and Chennai, which is over 200 miles. And we've been operating 20 electric trucks, heavy duty trucks along that corridor, which is the first commercial run. So we've done it over 6 months. And I think that was super exciting for me, largely because we were working with a really exciting partner, because we know that, you know, if we're going to reach our decarbonization goals, and obviously Amazon are very ambitious, but they need to be on board with this, right? So working with them is very exciting, but also being able to have like the first commercial run of heavy duty trucks along that corridor in India, I mean, for us is a game changer, I think, because no one else has done it. And I think sometimes you hear stories about, oh, you know, we ran a truck from A to Z. Well, that's great, right? It has to be done, but nobody done it for 6 months with commercial loads to prove that it's actually operational viable for real businesses. So we worked with 6 different companies to do it, to demonstrate the technology was working, identify whether the charging infrastructure was in the locations where they needed it, and like collect all that data that then we can share with others to make investment decisions. And it's actually led to some long-term contracts on heavy-duty electric trucks. And just super exciting, you know, when you kind of know that you've started something that's having a real impact.
And is that the area where you think that the next sort of 2, 3, 4 years might be its busiest, in that sort of heavy commercial area? Because obviously a lot of buses, and buses are brilliant, right? Because they're always operating in and around cities and schools and all of that sort of stuff, and, you know, decarbonizing those. But the trucks often are, you know, the most polluting, aren't they? You know, in terms of their output and emissions. Do you see that, you know, globally making real headway?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it has to, doesn't it? I think, you know, how many years ago did I start working in this sector? 18 years ago, maybe? You know, when I first, so my first real job in this sector was working for the Energy Saving Trust when I was working on the electric vehicle programs.
Ah.
And, you know, I was part of a team where we were giving, it was called the Plugged In Fleets Initiative, and we were giving fleet reviews to companies to help them understand whether they could adopt electric vehicles. And, you know, in the few years that I was there, you know, we test drove the first Nissan Leaf, you know, to go from test driving the first Nissan Leaf to where we are now operating, you know, I know it's only 20, right? But that's a start, right? 20 electric heavy duty vehicles in India. It kind of just shows you how we've transitioned in my career, in terms of the projects I've been able to work on. So it's progress. And I think, you know, I think we would all agree on this podcast that we haven't made the progress we probably all wanted. But if you look back, you know, 18 years ago, we've made huge strides. And yeah, so sorry, long-winded answer, but I think definitely the heavy duty vehicle segment is the one segment where it's probably hardest right now, because, you know, the bigger the vehicle, the more batteries you need, you know, and the charging infrastructure challenges that, you know, we have to solve, and the cost, total cost of ownership. It's just the extra level, isn't it, that we all have to try to overcome.
So one thing that comes through from you loud and clear is your passion for this stuff. Where does that come from? Because 18 years ago, you said, when nobody else really was talking about it, you said, Energy Saving Trust, fleet reviews, yeah, that's the way forward. And you've stuck at it. Why do you care about transport emissions so much?
I don't know. I'm sure, like, I think there's something called a transport geek, isn't there? And I think once you're in there, you can't get out. But through choice, I think. When I was doing my university education, I read about climate change properly for the first time and really understood what it potentially meant for us, you know, in terms of you know, all the stuff we're starting to see now, wildfires, drought, heat, impact on agriculture, you know, all the scary stuff. But I also was quite compelled at that point to want to be involved to be able to fix the problem. And I remember saying to my professor, where's the power? Where's the power? And he was like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, not the answer I was looking for. But I felt that policy was definitely a big part of the problem, but also the solution, right? Like having the right policies in place. And I think you can see that very clearly with electric vehicles. And I think that's one of the exciting things about what I do work-wise is you get to work with cities who are really committed to climate action, who are committed to transport decarbonisation, and they want to know what the right policies are. So, you know, that's what we're really doing. Is we're sharing, a big part of it is sharing the policy solutions. But I think with electric vehicles, I mean, my job is wider than electric vehicles, but I am a bit overly excited about them. And I think it's the tangibility, right? It's the tangibility. You can count them. You know, there's a lot of stuff in this that it's harder to count. You know, just where I live, you see electric vehicles parked on everybody's driveways. And I was like, this wasn't how it was 18 years ago. So you can see a real impact. And one of the things I loved about when I did live in London was cycling to work, and you'd see the electric vehicles on the way to work, and you could physically see the transition happening. So I left, when I left the Energy Saving Trust, I went to work for a different charity, and we focus on air quality. And we did a bit on electrification, but not much. And I really missed it because it didn't feel as tangible. And so then when I left there, I got the job at C40 leading the EV network. I just kind of felt like I'd gone from what felt like the right fit to something that wasn't quite the right fit to the right fit again. And then just one little anecdote was when I was at the Energy Saving Trust, I went to see a recruitment consultant because I thought, oh, I've been here a while now. I should probably look at my options, try to, you know, get a more senior position somewhere. And the recruitment assistant said, so what do you do? And I told her, she said, I've never heard anybody talk so passionately about their current role. Like, why are you looking for a new job? And I was like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't. So it took me a while to leave after that.
One of the big challenges that we face in transport, and I was the head of sustainable transport for the Scottish Government, so I've pondered this thing myself, is the transition to electricity, doesn't matter what it is, doesn't resolve the key issue of congestion in our cities.
Mm. Yeah.
And I've always drawn a very straight line between electrification and clean air and better life and societal benefits. But to get rid of congestion, is the right answer that we need to have better public transport and investment in that public transport to get people out of their vehicles so that only those people who need to use the roads do, and that we use rapid mass transit as the way forward? Or am I just making something really complicated overly simple?
Well, no, I think it's a huge part of the solution is the investment in public transport. You know, and that's what we see when we work with cities on vehicle restriction policies, because we know that vehicle restriction policies can clean up the vehicle fleets, right? You know, especially if you do it emissions based. But what you also need to do is reduce the amount of vehicles on the road in a way where people's lives are better, you know, that people are not restricted in, you know, unless the alternatives are there. So investment in public transport. So where I live in Poole, kind of in the suburbs. And where we lived before, there was fantastic bus service. I didn't drive. We lived in London. We moved to Poole. I never drove, didn't need to. I had a driving license, but never used it. And then we moved literally a mile and a half, 2 miles out, and the bus goes once an hour. Like, that's just not, you know, unless you're desperate, nobody uses the bus that only goes once an hour. So I had to learn to drive again. And I spent a lot of money and time and effort learning to drive again. I've got a Nissan Leaf, I shouldn't plug the model, but I've got my EV, very proud of that. But at the same time, I do use the car more than I would want to now. And I think the analogy I always use is, have you ever seen one of these nice Christmas films where everybody's hanging out at the industrial park? You know, they're all hanging around outside B&Q or, you know, the Big Next. No, because that's not cute and it's not fun. Like, people aspire to live where there's a thriving high street. And I think that's part of it, right? You need to have a high street and places where people can walk safely up and down, where there's cycling infrastructure, where you can park your bike and, your confidence is not going to be stolen. You know, here we've got fantastic new cycle infrastructure being installed and people are like, oh, no one's using it. But you can't just expect people to just start using a bike lane because a bike lane pops up. You know, habits have been formed. Does the bike lane go to the right destination? You know, you only have to look at a city like Denmark. And the mayor of the mayor of Copenhagen, sorry, city like Denmark, the mayor of Copenhagen.
It's a very big city.
The mayor of Copenhagen has a fantastic story to tell around cycling and, you know, how they've gone. And he said, everyone says, oh, but that's Copenhagen. He said, yeah, but in the 1960s, we were car dominated. But we invested the time, we had a strategy and we had a commitment to it. And now we are the cycling capital of Europe. Although apparently, I think Amsterdam would argue with that. But, you know, isn't that fantastic? That's one of the things I love about C40 is cities arguing about which is the best and which is the most sustainable, what's got the most cycling infrastructure. But yeah, I mean, public transport, walking and cycling infrastructure, but urban planning. You know, when you build out-of-town shopping centres, people go to out-of-town shopping centres. And how do you get there? You drive. You know, so the decisions that we make are incredibly important to, you know, the decisions people make on a day-to-day basis about how they travel.
So I'm, like John, fascinated. And when we first spoke, fascinated your passion, the drive, the energy that you exude, and also your capacity for information. Because, you know, to be able to just take in all of these countries and recycle the information. But it kind of causes me to ask the question, because I'm always curious around how people become the people that they are, right? So, you know, how was Caroline Watson at school, and what were you dreaming about? What was driving you back then? Were you sporty? Were you academic? Were you were the class clown? I was the class clown. So,
really?
When I was allowed to stay in, but talk to us a little bit about how you grew up and how this person was formed that we see in front of us today.
It's an interesting question. A hard one to answer, really. I mean, at school, I just don't know. I always thought I was a bit of a people person. I liked people. I liked being in different groups and just kind of being, you know. For me, I had a very happy school life because I just enjoyed going to school and spending time with my friends. I wasn't very academic, to be honest. I wasn't interested. I got more academic as I did my A-levels because I found topics I was interested in. And then again, when I started my degree, because I found stuff that I was interested in. But my dad was from a working class background and grew up in a council house, but he was very driven and he became a chartered accountant and then a management consultant after that. So I think he had a very strong ethos that if you applied yourself, you could be anything you wanted to be.
Yeah.
But then my mum, on the other hand, was very much like, just be happy. And I'd say, so what do you want me to be when I grow up, mum? And she'd say, I just want you to be happy. And I'd be like, what a lame answer. But on reflection, like, what a gift to give your child, right? I just want you to be happy. And so I think that combined helped me. And my dad was like, I don't mind what you do, but you've got to go to university. So I was like, okay, I've got to go to university. I'll just pick something fun like American studies and go off to America for a year. But that's when I got interested in politics and policy, was through the, you know, reading, learning about the American system. But, I don't know. I suppose that's given me the background to just want to explore and think I could, you know, read out climate change and think, okay, maybe I can do something about this rather than just sit back and do nothing about it and just worry about it. So I don't know. I felt very fortunate to have that upbringing.
We're recording this at the end of 2025. And this is likely to air just into 2026. And we're in a period where we're looking at what does the next 12 months look like for us? And when you work in a role like you do, where change can take time, I wonder what your shorter term 12 months objectives look like for this coming year. What are you focusing on?
Yeah, so we are doing a range of really interesting projects with cities. So when we first started out, just a little bit of back history, is that it was very much about sharing information with each other. The cities, helping cities share information with each other. But we realized that cities are really eager often for resources and help to deliver the projects or policies. So we've got a number of projects that are going on. The electric truck project in India and Latin America, I've already mentioned. So we're hoping to keep working on that. Over the next 6 months, we are launching electric vehicle charging hubs in Mexico, so specifically for freight vehicles. So at the moment, we've already launched some electric vehicle charging hubs in Rio. So the charging hubs already existed largely, but they weren't for trucks. they were basically for more focus on ride-hail vehicles. So what we've been doing is really helping the city transform the charging hubs so they work with the, you know, freight vehicles. So we're going to do more of that. We are also working on a project in America, in the US, where we are really mapping out charging infrastructure for what we call high mileage fleets, but mostly like taxis and ride-hail, so Uber type vehicles and taxis as well. So really working in the cities to help them identify where the charging infrastructure should go. Because what we know with ride-hail vehicle drivers often is that they don't own their own homes, or they live in high density buildings, flats. You know, they live in flats, they don't have their own off-street parking. So like, how do you put in charging infrastructure and know where it's going to be well utilized? So we're working with the ride-hail companies and the taxi companies to actually identify where do the drivers go to where they stop for like 6 or 8 hours, because you can't even assume they go to bed at night, right? They might be sleeping during the day. But if they stop for 6 to 8 hours and turn off the app, the chances are that's where they're sleeping. So it gives you we're using heat maps to identify where there's like a congregation of these drivers. So we identify where the charging infrastructure should go. So going to be doing more of that as well. So lots of exciting projects.
Clever stuff. Yeah. I mean, we hear about the heat maps when we're talking about fleets, but I've never really thought about it over that next level, you know, getting into to the drivers, because it is one of the biggest challenges. But you mentioned working in America, and I'd be remiss not to kind of go, isn't America shut at the moment when we come to decarbonization? What is the Trump effect? And I mean, I know that there's some very passionate you know, states like California and New York is doing a great job. There's a few others. Are their voices being quenched a bit, or is there still a really active decarbonization kind of talk within America?
Well, I think that's the really exciting thing about working with cities, is you kind of a step removed from the national or federal government. And I think one of the things that I was really excited about with working with C40 is, and I think I said this already, but it's about working with politicians that really want to do the right thing and they really want to act on climate. So our focus really is on the mayors that want to work with us. So, you know, we're working in New York, helping them really understand options for vehicle restrictions. Obviously, they've already got the congestion charge, but they can't do something like the ULEZ because they're not able to restrict vehicles based on emissions. So what we're looking at on the roads, but what we're looking at with New York City is whether they could do what's called glamorously an indirect source rule, which is whether you can restrict vehicles coming in and out of warehouses. Because if you can restrict the vehicles coming out of warehouses, or the, you know, the grounds of the warehouses, then that means that you can put an emissions restriction on trucks and vans that come into warehouses. So you're indirectly having a vehicle restriction, you know, but it's just not on the roads. So that's one thing we're exploring with New York. We're working with Seattle. They've just got a new mayor, but the former mayor was very committed to low pollution neighborhoods. The new mayor is also very strong on transport decarbonization. So we're looking at whether, you know, the city is still keen to move ahead with low pollution neighborhoods, which is their kind of proposal for cleaning up the streets and making healthier neighborhoods. So, you know, I think it's, yeah, very much about focusing on the positive and the opportunities, because we can't just sit back and say, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. We have to persevere and look where the opportunities are.
One of the key things that we seek to do with this podcast is to get a little bit behind the job description and the job title and all that stuff, and discover a little bit about the person that's performing the role. And I wonder, Caroline, if you strip your work out of your life for a second, you have a day off unexpectedly, how do you spend that time? How do you choose to relax or entertain yourself or continue to find excitement and thrills?
Well, I have a 5-year-old son. So normally, yeah, I know, So normally,
no
when I have a day off,
no thrills.
Well, do you know what? He's actually at that age now where it's getting a lot more kind of, he's more like, you know, it's a bit more like my friend now rather than this person that I just have to keep alive. And last night we went to, so I finish work at 3 o'clock now, so I can pick him up from school and we could do stuff together. Because he was a COVID baby and there was, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff we couldn't do then, so I'm trying to make up for it now. But so in Bournemouth, so I'm not far from Bournemouth, we have like a Christmas, there's Christmas markets and there's an ice rink, and then they've got glow in the dark Crazy Golf, which is really cool, we discovered last night. And there's a Christmas tree maze and then there's a little Christmas train. And so we did all that last night and it was just fantastic. And I think, yeah, I don't know, it just opens up your world again, I think, once you, you know, have a child. It took me a long time to have one, but now I have. I'm just really enjoying it. So that's lovely. If I had a day off where he wasn't around, I find them quite stressful only because I'm trying to do so many things. Like I realize I had one day off a while ago and had this long list of everything I was going to do. I'm going to do yoga. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to go for a, you know, I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And then suddenly I just thought, well, I've only got 6 hours because then I've got to pick him up from school. And I'm so stressed about getting through my to-do list. This is the least relaxing day off I've ever had. And but the funny thing is that all these activities, like relaxation activities, walking, meditation, yoga, but I need to get through them all. So I'm trying to chill out a bit and just, you know, enjoy the moment rather than, you know, trying to
I'm guessing you moved to the coast for a reason, right? Do you enjoy the coast? Is that something that's always attracted you? I love the area that you're in. I know reasonably well. I go to Southbourne quite regularly, which is just on from Bournemouth and often down by Hastingsbury Head. And I've been to Sandbanks.
Caroline's thinking of moving now. She's thinking, oh, God, he's a stalker. I'm off.
But so does that play a part in your world? Is like the ocean and or the sea an important part of your life, or is just like it's a nice place to live?
Well, do you know what? I love it here. And actually, I mean, we don't we don't have a sea view. We do have a sea view. I can see the sea. I can also see a lot of rooftops between us and the sea, but I do have a sea view and it's just beautiful. And I think if you'd asked me, do I want to live near the sea? I probably would have. I'm from Norfolk, right? And the sea in Norfolk is, you know, it's the North Sea. It's a bit bleak. So if somebody said, do you want to live near the sea? I'd probably be like, not really. But because I didn't know this place existed. And it was only about 6 years ago, my husband brought me down here and he was like, isn't this amazing? And I was like, this is actually really nice. So that's what we moved down during lockdown. And we thought we'd have to go back because, you know, I'm sure lots of people who relocated during lockdown thought they'd have to go back to their real world job. So I was down here on maternity leave. And then my job is, as we know, very global and international. And actually, the majority of people in my team are in different countries. I have a lot of people in South Africa, Brazil, Scandinavia, etc. So when I came back from maternity leave, I said to my boss, who was based at the time in Denmark, can I work from home? And he was like, sure, you know, I'm never going to see you in the office anyway. So what's the harm in working from home? And I mean, a lot of people do now, but it's just, yeah, it's just wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Because we were living in London before and I loved London at the time, but I don't miss it at all now. Like people say, do you miss it? I'm like, no, I don't. It's just busy. I mean, it's just really busy. And I think I felt I needed a calmer lifestyle.
Do you travel a lot with work or are you able to do an awful lot of this virtually?
Do a lot virtually. I haven't really travelled a lot recently, largely down to family commitments. But I mean, the opportunity is there to travel because we have so many international projects and events. But we're also really mindful. I mean, I've been to some real exciting places, but we're also very mindful that every time you jump on a plane, there's carbon emissions associated with that. So we have to get the balance right. You know, we have to make sure that if we are jumping on a plane, that it's worth, you know, it's worth the carbon and that we're going to kind of be confident that we're going to create enough offset for that, you know, in terms of helping cities reduce their own carbon to justify us flying.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to pick your brains on COP and the series of meetings of world leaders where they all jet in with their private jets and they sit and they talk and we seem to make very limited progress towards supporting financially those countries that can't afford to decarbonize right now and need to. There's huge poverty. And I wonder, is COP losing its way, in your opinion? Do we need it? Is it a network and a structure that you tap into already? Tell us about your relationship with COP, if any.
So, I mean, personally and professionally, I've not been particularly involved in COP. We have other teams at C40 that are engaged in that. And I think what we're trying to do as an organisation is bring the voice of the mayors to the table because we know we're working with some of the most progressive, if not the most progressive, policymakers in the world, but also cities that have tried and tested a lot of the solutions. So we're bringing those voices to the table at COP to say, look, this is possible, it's feasible, we've done it, here's the evidence. So I think in that sense, you know, we are, as an organisation, trying to influence the process. I mean, you know, any person who's involved in this profession, I think, you know, in this area professionally, I think is probably feeling a little bit despondent about the whole thing, because, you know, we're not, you know, even if you can say there are wins from the recent one, it's just, we all know it's nowhere near enough. And I think that's one of the things that's most frustrating, is that even though we've seen huge progress and strides in the last 20 years or so, we're so far away from where we would, where we need to be. You know, we've, yeah, you know, 2020 was a, when I joined C40, we had a report called Deadline 2020. Yeah, that's 5 years ago, right? We were all saying all this stuff needs to be done by 2020. Then it's 2025, now it's 2030. 2030 is just around the corner. It was so far, and we know the technologies work. This is not, we know what the solutions are. It's just we need to have brave politicians who are prepared to implement them.
And it does seem that the bravery is all around, you know, like the people that are going, oh, stuff it all, we're not doing it, you know, like Reform doing the nuts stuff in Kent and Northamptonshire. It just seems like people are pushing back against it, and yet actually the technology just means that it is better. It's better for everybody, better for the drivers, better for the community, better for the environment. It just, there's so many benefits. But anyway, gosh, let's not get despondent, because you're doing incredible stuff and I want to help you do incredible stuff. And we have a closing tradition here on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast, which I'm sure you'll know about because you've listened to them all. But we have the magic wand. But for those of you that are regulars here, you will notice that I'm away from home. And guess what I left at home? Yes, I left the wand at home. But we have something just as good. We have the magic lightning bolt. Yes, we do. So the lightning bolt is coming to you, Caroline. Over the airwaves, here we go. There we go. It's all over to you. So you have in your possession now the magic lightning bolt. Yes,
and
I know.
Caroline is intelligent enough not to take it. First one ever.
You are the first one in 144 not to take it. But anyway, we won't dwell on that fact that you're too clever for this. we want to understand, what would you really wish for if you had the magic wand to wave? What would you wish for? What's one thing that you'd like to change in the world immediately?
Oh wow, that's a big ask, isn't it? I mean, I just would love us all to be on track for 1.5 degrees, which hopefully all the listeners know what I mean by that. And I just think we've had so... Sorry, no, it's just one wish, but can I give a backstory? Just very quickly. I think, you know, we've known about climate change as society for like, since what, the 1970s? There's no reason why we should be where we are today. So like, all the vehicles should be electric or zero emission. You know, we should be able to walk safely and cycle safely. That's what I would love. My husband got knocked off his bike last year and broke his torn a ligament in his shoulder, and it's all been pretty nasty. But, you know, this really puts off cycling. And yeah. I'd have a 20-mile-per-hour zone outside my son's school. But, I mean, I just think we need to be thinking more sustainably as a whole. And, you know, was it Theresa May came up with the... net zero target. Let's all get behind it, right? You know, we're not a political, I'm not a political person, it's not a political organization per se. We're, you know, supportive of all political parties. You just have to be committed to climate change. So let's all get behind the target and, you know, really push for it.
I think it's very well articulated. I don't think anybody's ever mentioned the 1.5 degree rise that we're trying to keep the temperature down below. And the sad reality is that, you know, people are already beginning to accept 2 degrees and probably are going to go to 2.5. I mean, these are the sorts of realities that we're having to face. But I think what the one thing that I feel that all of the, I'm not a politician at all, and I'm about as political as a house brick and just don't care about it at all. I'm absolutely none of the above, because they, it feels to me, and I can say what I like politically, they all feel like they're a shambles, and they can't make up their mind. They can't stay the course. They'll move, you know, just to gain an extra few votes. And, you know, it just drives me utterly nuts. But we can do something. And Caroline, you are a brilliant example of somebody, one person, looking to make a difference across the whole world. And that inspires me. It really does, that you are tackling something and supporting something by bringing together the greatest minds, you know, around policy and decarbonization and all of those sorts of things, and you're helping them move forward. And I think that is really to be applauded. Now, I know, you took the job, but you've made this job and you have built it out and you've brought people together and you're doing great stuff. And I can't get enough of the ideas that you know, I want to hear more about. Oh, I could talk to you, but okay, what's happening here? What's happening there? What's in South Africa? What's in Brazil? Tell us how we tap into what you're doing.
Well, I mean, a lot of this stuff is on the C40 website. It's on the C40 social media. So we tend to launch reports when we've done some really, you know, finished some projects and, you know, got great results to share. So that's the C40 website and social media as places to look for most for this stuff.
There are times when I do this podcast when I think, you know, it's been a lovely conversation. Today is one of those days where I know I've met somebody genuinely who will make a difference. And there aren't many of those. To be able to knit together all of the things and the people that you do is a superpower. And I suspect it's not just because of the job you do. I suspect this is your nature. This is who you are. And you are lucky enough to have a job that uses those skills to the maximum. And I genuinely am privileged. It's a bit like me meeting a human ChatGPT of transport. And it doesn't matter what we ask, you've got a balanced, rational view that is given examples and you show what can be done. And I just think it's been an absolute privilege. And I do hope that I get an opportunity to speak to you again, because I have thoroughly enjoyed this.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was great meeting you both and speaking. Thank you so much.
Hey, the pleasure has been absolutely ours. And thank you. Thank you so much. So everybody, listen, that's been Caroline Watson. So connect with C40 Cities. You're going to get some really quality insights. I presume people can connect with you on LinkedIn. Caroline, would that be okay?
Yep.
Cool. Great. So all of the links will be in the podcast notes. Check out all of that information, because we can only benefit from it. There's been lots of other podcasts. You can go and check those out too. And of course, if you want to decarbonize your own world, you can get onto our website and find the best electric vehicle deals through leasing.com. So just head over to our site there and you'll be able to pick something up really cool there. We are so grateful, Caroline, for your time and for all of the insight that you've shared today. Thank you again so much. And we look forward to speaking to you all next time. Have a great day, everybody.